Now that your iPod valves are all warmed up, it's time for podcast number 27. I'm Brian Green, your host, and on today's podcast, we shall sample the music of Lisa Hake, recorded 23rd of November 2007 in Dundalk in Ireland. That Twitter thing, stop making noise while I'm talking on the radio, has no respect. I should have silenced it. But first, before we hear the music of Lisa Hake, let's take a promo.
On Friday, November 30th, Chillin' with Love Spirals presents a special feature on Love Spirals' brand new third CD, Long Way From Home.
You know, this is going to be a pretty deep record. It's not going to be some light, puffy...
This album is really heavy, and it makes me really emotional, like... When we did the performance for Second Life, I just kind of felt like, oh, thank God I'm all alone in my safe space here in the studio, because I just felt so vulnerable.
I'm really proud how this one came out. I've said before, and I'll say it again, I think this is my best record ever, and I've made a few.
We are just straddling all kinds of genre lines here. There's no way that we can jump on any one bandwagon.
People can categorize it all they want, but for me, I'm just making music.
Check out this extended feature, November 30th, at lovespirals.com.
What has Lisa Hake, what has you here in Ireland? Like, where are you from, and what are you doing over here?
Well, I have been, my whole life I've been writing songs, and I had this dream to record a CD for some time now, because once you amass a certain amount, it's like you want to just put them to rest, put them down, archive them, and then go on to the next batch. And so I had the best ones picked, and I really wanted to do a CD, and I could never find the time in my real life. You know, sometimes you've just got to get away to really have a vacation. So I needed, what happened is I really needed to get away to record, because it never occurred. And so my husband's idea was, why don't I take a sabbatical? And it took us 2 years, because where I worked, they never even heard of it. No one took a sabbatical. And so I dreamt up this idea that I was going to leave for 6 months. They weren't going to pay me. They were just going to allow me to leave and hopefully come back. And so my husband applied for a Fulbright scholarship in Ireland. We had traveled in Europe, and we loved Ireland. We loved the mythology, the place, the people, the music, everything. And he said, let's go to... He said, I think that would be the place for you to record. Never mind Nashville, never mind anywhere else. Let's go to Ireland. You record. I'll do a Fulbright scholarship, and we'll just get this done. So that's how I came to Ireland.
And that was a six-month sabbatical, which has extended.
That was 6 months going on a year and a half ago, yeah.
But you have that wonderful album.
I do. So I moved, and we rented a beautiful house in Skerries, which the owners kindly let me bring my dog Wally with me, because if you're going to play and write, you got to have your dog sitting next to you. And everything just fell into place, and I recorded at Pulse, and the CD is called Tree Over Sea. And we recorded it. It took us, we had 3 days of studio time, and then a couple more days for me to do some vocals. And but with all the people who played with me, 3 days we did the 12 songs.
And is there a bit of Skerries in that, like, did the influence, or were all the songs imported?
Let's see. I should have my CD with me. No, they weren't. I don't know if there was Skerries in particular. And I had traveled in Europe, so there's a bit of Europe in it already. But they weren't all done. For instance, one that we'll hear, that I'm going to play, is called The Magic Blue Bottle from She. She being the S-I-D-H-E, from meaning fairies. And I wrote that once I was over here. So that it's about someone from County Clare, but
I was just
and I wrote, actually I remember the day that I wrote the chorus, because I was one of those really windy days, so I knew no one could hear me singing. I was walking my dog on the beach, the rocky beach, the strand in Skerries, and singing at the top of my lungs, because no one else would be insane enough to be out in the wind and the rain.
That's Skerries, all right. That's what I was trying to get at. Was there a bit of bleak, cold East Coast Ireland in it? And there it is.
screen. My parents were sleeping. I tiptoed down the steps till one started creaking. I was frozen, too afraid to move. My emotions
Faint of Heart.
And it's all about?
Well, I had read a newspaper article about the Kursk submarine. It was a Russian submarine, and it was there was an explosion on board. You might remember it was a few years ago, and it was stuck at 300 feet. And what was haunting and chilling about it is that they knew that there were survivors because they could hear some people inside tapping on the hull in Morse code, and every day there was less, you know, fewer and fewer taps, and they were unable to rescue these guys in time. And, you know, just the idea of it filling up with cold water, and some of them took, you know, wrote letters goodbye and wrapped them in plastic and put them in their pockets when they later exhumed the submarine and found them. And I just couldn't get the idea out of my head, and I started thinking about, you know, that time in your life when you know what you want, but you're caught between what you want and what your parents might want you to do, and how bad you feel when you don't follow your own passion. And so it was about a young girl who is in love with one of these submariners, and she doesn't know, she doesn't have the experience, she doesn't know she's never going to see him again. But when he comes to her house and taps on the screen and wants her to come out and see him, you know, sneak out at night before the last time he's going to go off, she doesn't do it. And so she carries this guilt that... Anyway, that's what it's called.
Right.
Paint of Heart. And I wanted to get the a tapping sound. I want to recapitulate that in the song.
For the Morse.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So I did. I thought, well, how could I play the guitar? I'd see some people. I know that there are people who do fancy, you know, rhythmic tapping things. But I thought, well, where could I tap? It sounds pretty good there, and it sounds really good right above the bridge. And so I'm just taking my thumb and tapping on the bridge, and then hammering on these notes. And I thought, well, wow, that's so simple. But I could just sing. It's got to be simple and easy for me to do it. So I'm just tapping. Song, just tapping. Oh, and the tuning, which is a wonderful tuning called Dadgad. It's D A D G A D, which is lovely just by itself, open. So just tapping.
Call that understated. You're not doing a lot to get a lot out.
I'm not doing hardly anything. It's that, yeah. That's one reason I like tunings. It's a little bit like cheating, but it's got to be. I'm not really a very good guitar player, but I really love the guitar and I love the sound. And plus, you're trying to sing at the same time, so it's got to be pathetically simple. And I have these little bitty hands, really. So yeah, I'm just tapping here and hammering on, or here I'm just throwing on the chord, you know. But I like that, or the chorus, I think that was where I started with it, was just, there's the chorus, and all I'm doing is tapping the guitar again.
Jargon Buster, you said tunings a couple of times. Are you saying that the guitar is not naturally tuned, it's tuned deliberately to a certain dimension for this song?
Exactly, sorry about that. Okay. So, typically, the standard guitar would be E, A, D, G, B, E, going down the strings.
Yeah.
And so I've altered the last string and tuned it down to a D, left the fifth one okay. This one is all right, the fourth. That one's all right. Okay, so I've changed the last string, the second string, and the first string, tuned them down to give you that sound.
That's cheating.
Way.
But it's also...
So already it sounds pretty, and you don't have to do anything. And this is one chord, and I'm holding down... don't ask me what it is, but I'm holding down one finger to make something pretty.
Great for the studio. It must be terrible live to have to switch equipment, is it? Or...
Oh, and I was going to say, but I'm not the first cheater. There are famous, very famous, fantastic ones before me. So Joni Mitchell wrote in tunings, and Crosby, Stills, and Nash... And, you know, countless others. And you know, you can look up their tunings on the internet and use them. Live, I'm working on it. There are people who are whizzes at tuning. And I've made up like a little chart where I know which strings I'm going to tune. And it kind of limits you in the order of songs, because it's easier to lower the strings than to raise them. So there's a logical progression, you know, how many... from one song to the next, how many strings I'll have to change. But I'm not very good at doing it because, you know how some people get just freaked out when you pop a balloon? I live in fear of broken strings. It really, so some people it's no big deal. For me, I really don't like it. And it's usually this tricky G string is the one that goes.
It's like, working here with a magician, and they're revealing the secrets of how they do the magic trick. I think that you said Joni Mitchell, Crosby, Stills, Nash. Is it a folk thing that, you know, or do many other genres of music do this? Tuning stuff.
Oh, I'm sure they do. You know, I know that, like, mandolin, and I don't know how many people will tell you. I don't have the ear to say. I mean, I know there are some people who can just say, oh, they're in that tuning, or they've changed this string or the other. But I'm sure that it's widely done. How I didn't like to tune because I'm a lazy, lazy tuner. Since I have it in, this tuning is, I'm going to take it from the sixth string to the top string. It's called Dad Dead. So it's D, A, D, E, A, D. And it sounds like this open. So again, it already sounds pretty good. And like there's, you get some neat chords. But in this song, in Longing Saw, it's a song about the last tree left on the planet Earth, and I wanted to get the sound, the kind of the rhythm of a, you know, a saw going shh, 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 back and forth, so that's why I did. Which, Brian, you're looking at it. How pathetically simple is that?
Well, I'm looking at it, but I'm rocking my head like I'm watching tennis or a sawing action.
I'm just hammering on two fingers back and forth, rather than plucking them.
But just because it's simple doesn't mean it's not effective.
Well, I liked it. I mean, I just, that would be, the whole song would be just from doing that. And then, you know, all I have to do is, like, find a note or two, and then I love it. Like, just finding that chord, whoa. You know, who knows what it is, but it's gorgeous. Trust me, it's all very simple. But it's, so it was a song about the giant redwood trees in Northern California, and they're the tallest creatures on the planet and the longest lived. They live thousands of years, and you can go to Northern California and they're, you can drive through some of them. You can see some of them that are made into little houses. You can see some of them that have been cut down, and you know the rings show that they're 3,000 years old. And just to be in the presence of the trees is just amazing. And there are some that people try to keep hidden because they don't even know how old they are. And there was one of these trees called Luna that a woman named Julia Butterfly went up in and didn't come down for over 2 years. She wrote a book about this. And the reason she did it and stayed in the tree, as a tree sitter, as it were, was to prevent the logging company from cutting it down. So rather than climb up a tree to do my part, I wrote a song. And I actually got to meet Julia Butterfly and give her a copy of the song. And I know she's for real because her hands were so calloused from, you know, climbing around in the tree. And during those 2 years, she has, you know, dark, dark jet black hair, but she had a little strand in front that went all white during that time. She's only like 20 years old.
And did she succeed?
Luna, it still stands as far as I know. Yes, and she's brought quite a lot of publicity to the to the Redwoods.
Wonderful conclusion to a great story. Let's hear another tune. What do we have?
Let's do the Magic Blue Bottle from She. Magic Blue Bottle that was owned by Biddy Early, and she was a woman from County Clare. And when I came over, I read about her, that apparently she had been gone away with the fairies, and the fairies, she befriended them somehow. She did something for them, and they bequested her. They gave her this magic blue bottle that was, I guess, highly coveted by some, and but there were people who would come to her house, travel for miles, to ask her questions, and she would gaze into this bottle and be able to give them the answers. And she didn't charge them anything; they just brought her gifts. And I thought she was so cool.
If someone says you're away with the fairies, it can have another meaning. Mean you're a bit mad.
Well, yes, and I think so. Dually, you know, I think that if there was a person like that alive today, there are some people who would, would not want her to have the power she might have, even though I think she sounded like she used it in a very ethical way. And some people who wouldn't believe it, and some people who would, and there'd be all different opinions.
But she certainly wouldn't fit in, so she would be, outcast of some sort.
By some, and then I think by others she might be revered, and that's why it would be so. I mean, the song, it was about power in some way, because there was, people who wanted to take the bottle, take the bottle away from her, and how you need to be careful with your power, and that I wrote it that, she was a very good person, and even wanted, when she died, she knew she was going to die, she wanted to make sure that no one got a hold of this bottle. But it was also about just the idea of sitting in an audience watching a magician, and you want it to be real. You want that there's some magic, or you want to believe. So I wrote the song from the perspective of the bottle, so it was planted for her to find, and then she gets rid of it, and it's out in the sea somewhere. And anyway.
And the mystery continues.
There you go.
And the construction of the song, is there anything?
Well, this is a neat tuning. This one is starting from the sixth string. It's E A D E A E. And again, it sounds really good. And I found this little chord, and I think someone had shown me this picking pattern, which I do ad nauseum through the song, which is also very easy. But I heard that, and then I just thought it was so hypnotic, That's where it came from. So I thought, wow, that's sort of mesmerizing, hypnotic, mysterious, mystic. That song's about magic, and that's all I knew. And so I kind of had that much. And then I came to Ireland, and then I read about Biddy Early, and the rest is history. And then there was the part I told you I wrote on the beach in Skerries, and so I had to come and find out where it might be on the guitar. And then I wanted the part when she tosses the bottle into the ocean, so I had found this high part, that sounded sort of like flying to me. That was the middle eight of it. Anyway, that part. Because I wanted it to go somewhere else. I wanted to kind of feel like the arch of the bottle.
And where to next?
A darker place. Let's do Foxglove. Gives his horse the Foxglove. So this one is about, it's about self-destruction in one way, but it's also about, you know, being attracted to the dark side, being attracted to those dark, dangerous types. You know, they may not be good for you, but, so it's about a woman who thinks she, you know, she's attracted to this guy who doesn't even notice her, and then she comes around. But the person I was imagining was it was his name, Uther Pendragon, you know, with the tattoos and kind of the powerful, dark, mysterious guy. Anyway, and the reason I called it Foxglove was I thought, well, what's something else that's beautiful that I really like, but would be toxic, would be poisonous to me. And that the plant foxglove, I just don't think there's anything more beautiful. But its other name is digitalis, which is a heart poison. It will stop your heart if you ingest it, actually. So that's why it's called foxglove. And this one is a really weird tuning. This one is starting on the sixth string, is D, A, C sharp, E, B, C sharp. And so open, it just sounds great. Kind of have the tonal center there, you know. And this song, I wasn't looking for something. I was just playing around, and I found that. In fact, I would say the whole song is right there. That thump, and I thought, ooh, that sounds like a horse. And I don't even think I thought it. I just. And, you know, and that was the first line. I dream about a man who rides a silver stallion in a storm. You know, it was like.
You say you find these things. You just play around and they get discovered.
I think of it. this is why it's sort of hard for me. These are the. There are many bad reasons to do this. And one of the. So kids, don't try this at home. The bad reason is that I'm lost everywhere I go. So let's say you kept your guitar in standard tuning. Then you know you're playing a C or a G or something else. I'm in a totally different country every time. So I think of it as, you know, it's that wonderful, you know, virginal first time idea that you're in a new place and how vivid everything is. So the first time you go into this tuning and then you start walking around in there, you know, your senses are heightened and you're really listening.
It's the Enigma machine, and you're out in code.
Yeah, yeah. So these shapes are completely unfamiliar, and in this song, they're hard. As you can see, they were hard for me to reach. You know, they're long distances, but it's worth it.
Coda's poetry, so.
Aha, that's right. That's coda, right? It means that it works for me to be in a new place.
New place, and you are in a new place here in Ireland. I was going to ask you.
Yeah.
Just to close up, really. How have you found the making of the album and the whole music business? The good, the bad, and the ugly. What is it like here in Ireland as opposed to other experiences? And particularly with the changing focus in this decade, that the music industry is being turned on its head a lot in favour of the independent.
Well, my initial experience was so wonderful, so rapturous, so incredible, that's part of a big reason why I stayed, is that everything, you know, when everything just falls in place like synchronicity in your life. I found someone turned me on to the producer. Actually, the way I started is I thought, well, why don't I call a place I can't possibly hope to record in? What would that be? That'd be Windmill Lane. So I call Windmill Lane and I meet the nicest guy there who tells me about Pulse. They put me in contact with a producer. He gets together the most amazing musicians. We meet and it just clicks and it's like magic to me. Everyone's loving what they're doing, and So I never went back home because of that wondrous experience. So that was fantastic. Now, after you write the songs and you record them, which recording, I would say, is the most fun part, and I've had the pleasure to play in different places, where I am right now, Brian, and this wonderful experience today, this was just, I mean, this is what life's about. This is fantastic as we're sitting here doing this. But where I am right now is that I have all the songs. I have more than enough songs to record the next CD. That's where I'm looking. And I have zero money, having been out of work. So how to make the business end of it, I don't know. I'm probably hopeless and the wrong person to ask. And, I just plug away in little steps. My philosophy is try to do one thing a day. So you're my thing today. I don't know what the next step is.
What has radio been good to? Have venues been open to?
I think the most difficult thing for me is that the way my personality is that I don't mind having a good competition. I'm Aries, so that's great for me. That's fun, no hard feelings, but you want your chance. And to have a chance, if the radio stations would just play one or two of the songs and then say, nobody likes them, sorry, here, take it back, fine. But to put it up against somebody else, and get it out there. No, I've found that to be next to impossible to get radio play. There are a few unique people, and you've got to find them who are willing to still put on things that they like.
Have you turned on Irish radio and listened to the rubbish that's been played?
Well, any radio anywhere.
Yeah.
What is the niche? Brendan Teer and LMFM has been good to me, and Charlie McGettigan and Shannon Side. So you find some people, and I've listened to listening to your podcasts. I mean, I'm ever hopeful, but it's really sometimes hard to keep going because for all the CDs you send out and phone calls you make and emails, and you get nothing.
Ever hopeful Aries Lisa Haig, tell us how people can get more of your music, if your website or blog or MySpace.
There's a website, which is lisahake.com. So it's LISAHAKE, like the fish, Hake. And then there's my MySpace, which is...
MySpace.com.
Right. And then / Lisa Haig Music. And those would be the best places. And you can buy my CD at CD Baby.
Lisa Haig, thanks for having us today.
Thank you so much for coming.